see.
I got it.
Thanks, Chief.
There, I can. Eric's talking, but I can't hear him.
Okay, I thought it was maybe my computer.
Okay, I'm still on my phone. I'm such a whiz. I finally got the laptop, but.
Hello, Chair Delastrinos Johnson.
Hi. Welcome. I'll get started. Welcome everyone to the first Community Services and Safety Committee of the meeting of the year. Zach is absent tonight, and our council president, Kruller, is stepping in for him. Thank you for joining us.
Seems like it was just,
huh?
Seems like it was just yesterday I was doing this.
I know, right? This is your committee. That is very true. She's not leaving. So let's go ahead and get started because we have a number of things on the agenda tonight. Our first item on the agenda is the contract for minor home repair program, and I believe Stacy is going to be speaking to that.
Good evening, Council. Thanks for having me tonight. I am coming before you tonight to get authorization from this committee to move forward with the mayor's signature a little bit later on this month for the minor home repair contract, which is 2020 funds that we will be spending in 2021. And the program that has been running very successfully, and we have been awarded funding for the last 16 years. Tukwila has been the lead on this, and this last year we had a really interesting year that I'd like to share a little bit about with you with COVID and the crisis that our independent contractors have had, getting their PPE in line and figuring out how they can remain safe while also really protecting some of our most vulnerable residents in the community. So as you may know, the Minor Home Repair Program assists folks up to median income. Here in Tukwila, we always serve very low income, but there is this flexibility for a wider range of funding. For instance, to have a deck repaired or replaced or to put in a hot water heater, not everybody has those kinds of financial resources readily available to them to do things that have been kind of prolonged maintenance that have now turned into a safety issue. And the really nice thing, Tukwila has been able to run the program all four quarters this last year in 2020. Not all of our partner agent cities were able to do that because they had contractors who wouldn't go into homes, and everybody's interpretation of what Governor Inslee's requirements were was a little bit different. I feel really fortunate that our projects kept coming in, and all of the contractors that we worked with were very happy to go into homes, and they would send me pictures of their hand sanitizer in their vehicle, their PPE equipment on, their masks, their booties, their gloves. And one of the things they asked of me was that when I am working with a resident, if I let them know, and this is the really hard part, that they have to let the person in and they have to show them where the work needs to be done and they have to remove themselves from the area. And for folks who have been isolated from anywhere from, you know, 3 to 10 months while we were spending these funds. Actually, I think 3 to 8 months while we were spending these funds. This is the first time some of our vulnerable residents have had an opportunity to see somebody face to face. And so there was, I know that that was hard. Some of that impulse control was hard for some of our residents, but they were grateful to get some really necessary and safety-related repairs done all throughout the four consortium city. Tukwila was able to complete 26 projects this year out of the total program total of 77. We worked with 15 unduplicated residents. Our budget was $26,750 this last year for Tukwila. Each city had the same amount, but Tukwila was able to spend $31,622 because the other cities had quarters where they didn't spend any money. And so, of course, when it's CDBG funds, it doesn't roll over to us the next year. So we just spend as much as we can on authorized repairs and things that need to get done. And we have a great partnership with King County. They've got a really good team there and provide a lot of guidance. And it took a lot longer this year than we've experienced in the past for us to get contractors out into homes, where something might take 2 or 3 months. We used to be able to get somebody out there within the week. And the nice thing was, particularly, I had 7 hot water heater repairs this last year, and that is absolutely unheard of. And these were leaking. These aren't just, oh, they're getting old, it's time to repair them. They were leaking or they were malfunctioning. And our electrician that we contract with prioritized Tukwila residents so that they would get, so it wouldn't get worse, and so that it would, so folks wouldn't be in this critical time without hot water and the ability to wash and clean themselves and their families and their homes and be safe. And so it was really a unique year, and the cities worked really hard, the partner cities worked really hard, and our communities are incredibly grateful, and we were able to spend not quite all of our budget. We had to give King County some money back overall for the program, but understandably so, considering two cities had 2 quarters where they weren't able to provide any service. But I feel like now, since we've been through this for a full year, that this funding cycle, and each city will have $25,000 to spend, I think we're going to have no problem spending out, because our contractors have a better understanding of how they can do work very safely. And I think we've worked really hard with how we've talked with our residents to let them know this is the protocol we need to follow, but it's also very safe, and that not only are we invested in their well-being, but the folks we contract are very invested in their well-being. So as we wrapped up 2019 funds and have come into 2021 looking at 20 funds, we've got a little bit less to spend, but ultimately our goal is to spend all of the dollars. That's always our goal, and to help as many residents as possible. It could be something from a leaky faucet to replacing 3/4 of a rotten deck that a person could fall through. So health and safety is the focus, and like I said, we've been working really diligently and in this last year, and not as much for the cities, but really relying on our experts, our contractors as the experts in assuring, making sure that we can, that they are safe, and also that our residents are safe. So what I'm coming and asking is if the council would forward this contract for mayoral signature at the COW special meeting. I believe it's on the 8th.
Thank you.
And I'm delighted to answer any questions anybody has as well.
So Kate and Deshaun, do you guys have any questions for Stacy? Go ahead, Kate. You look like you're ready to go. And then we'll go to Deshaun.
Because he's senior, so.
Okay, go ahead, Deshaun.
I know this program very well, so I really don't have any detailed questions. I'm very comfortable with this going forward. I understand the process for when there aren't, or when other cities don't use their funds, and I think we expedited that in JRC last year. So you kind of talked about the PPE piece, but I think there's an opportunity to talk a little bit about the lessons learned even from our own permitting processes in a pandemic. So you don't have to say anything now, and so I assumed, and I think it's okay for me to assume because you probably did it, but, you know, feedback, as someone that had a bunch of stuff done during this time when we were working from home. So, again, you don't have to speak to it now, but maybe maybe add that in the items that you cover at the special meeting if folks are comfortable, because I think that also lets us know, you know, when, you know, we're closed, how the work gets done. And then I think that's it. So I'm comfortable moving this forward.
Yeah, I'm good moving this forward. Learned a little bit more about how you're tackling some of the challenges of the year. The one question I might have is, you know, I think we benefit when other cities don't use up the funds because we put them here. But out of sense of fair play, and since we're all partners and a little bit of geographic equity, is there a lessons learned way to work with those cities more to make sure they're getting their fair share?
Well, since everybody has the opportunity, that they all are managing their own program. Although I am the lead, it is their program, and I do provide an enormous amount of technical assistance to the other cities to ensure that we're following HUD guidelines, that they're doing the follow-up, the aftercare, which is kind of what Councilmember Quinn was speaking to with customer satisfaction survey, but they are required to keep their own books and their own approval through King County, and they're required to do follow-up. And so I encourage them, and I also tell them, don't forget, we have a contract and we committed to specific numbers, and it's our responsibility individually. And I remind them of that every quarter. And so
That sounds more than fair, and I appreciate knowing that. Talk to other council members about it. That's all I have. I'm in support, and I see Deshaun is wanting to say more. So I'm yielding my time.
Thanks. Go ahead, Deshaun.
Just quickly, this is not to kind of highlight what you said, Kate, but I think there's an opportunity for clarity with the work that we've done on the JRC. So geographic equity is kind of not a real thing. And in particular, in this case, it isn't, because the JRC all agreed that the need has continually come from South King County. And so even amongst the JRC, they understand not only that there's more need, but the professionalism of how we roll out the program is highly efficient. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to kind of say that. And then the last thing is just really the eligibility. We kind of did an assessment, and the eligibility exists more in South King County than it does in other places. And that's how we've all approached this, actually this fund, with the blessing of the full kind of JRC.
I've got to follow up on that one. I appreciate all your comments. When I use geographic equity, it is about how we are spreading it across geography. And if the set that we're in is South King County, then I'm worried about equity across King County, South King County, not throughout King County. So I don't feel comfortable being redefined in that dimension, but I appreciate your words. And I wasn't saying anything about us doing anything wrong. It was with that lens that I was saying, we're a steward to some degree where other cities aren't, and I want to make sure they can't turn around and go, wow, funny how the money ends up in Tequila when they're in charge. So it's clear Stacy's got the handle on that, and I'm really, really pleased with it.
There's a staff team, actually, of South King County cities that work together, and they're almost there's a mind meld in those meetings. Cynthia, you will see. There's a lot of trust in Stacy. So just to reassure, just being present, hearing their commentary, knowing that, and then they vote every time to let Tukwila facilitate the dollars. And the reason why is because we're efficient and we know what the need is.
Yeah, you know, throughout SCA, beyond JRC, it's known. I just wanted to make sure that as a council member, when I talk with other cities, that I had the right words to say that Stacy would want me to say in response. Thanks.
Thank you. I don't have any additional questions, so it sounds like we're all comfortable moving this forward to the consent agenda on the 8th. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Stacy.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate it.
The next item on our agenda is the 2020 fourth quarter police department report, and we have Interim Chief Drever to give us that report. Thank you. Oh, we can't hear you.
Chief, you might try leaving.
How about now?
Oh, yeah, we hear you.
Sorry, switching between Zoom, Teams, Google messes with the setting. So I'm glad we've got it now. So let me share my screen. So can everybody see the screen?
Yep.
Okay. So for the fourth quarter, some of our staffing as it relates to passing on, we promoted two sergeants, Isaiah Harris and Keith Cullens, and both are already doing exemplary and well-respected by the crews. So we're excited to move that forward. We had held off on sergeants' promotions just before Chief Linton had left. We were holding on, waiting for a new sergeant's training program to be in place. And literally the week that Chief Linton retired, we were able to finish that program. And so we move forward, and they're the first two sergeants to actually have a truly formalized training program that will help them set themselves up for success, them and the department. So we're excited about that. We had our new evidence technician, Danielle Burnett, start with us, and she's just about wrapping up her training. So now we've got our two evidence technicians working. We've needed a second evidence technician for the longest of times, probably since back when I started 20-something years ago. We had recognition take place. For those of you who know Tricia McWilliams, she is also known by Patty, but Tricia is a member of our family. She has truly endeared herself to our hearts. She takes care of us. And so as she goes about her daily duties, we see her love and kindness on a daily basis, and we wanted to do something for her. So we all chipped in among the PD, got gift cards for her and her family. Everyone in the PD donated towards the gifts. And we just wanted to thank her for everything she's done for us over the years. For those that don't know, she stocks our refrigerators and our cupboards with snacks and foods that the officers that are working all sorts of shifts and staff always have something to eat and drink. And she does this all on her own dime. And so we wanted to find a way to pay her back where she could not like if we gave her gift cards or money to go do something nice for herself, she would just spend it on us. So we wanted to do something. So we got her some gifts. We got her a Echo Show and some restaurant gift certificates for her and her family to go out. And, oh, she's just been beaming ever since. She was a little embarrassed at first, because she does it out of the kindness of her heart. She didn't want to do it for any recognition, but we love her dearly, so we wanted to make sure we recognized her. We also had Commander Todd Rossi, recognized by the Delta White Center Lodge 172, the Masons Lodge here in Tukwila, as Employee of the Year or Law Enforcement Professional of the Year. And Commander Rossi was presenting or was presented an award by Mayor Eckberg for the Outstanding Police Officer Year Award and the Lodge Annual Recognition Day. So he was recognized for his actions back on August 29th of this last year. While he was off duty with his family in Graham, on that day, Commander Rossi had come upon a collision and in which two individuals were trapped in the vehicle and the vehicle had caught on fire. A woman was extricated from one of the vehicles, had regained consciousness long enough to inform Commander Rossi and a Pierce County Sheriff Department deputy that was on scene that her 11-year-old daughter was still trapped in the back seat of the car of the vehicle, which had quickly been taken over by flames. And so as the flames began to spread, Deputy Wiggins was utilizing a fire extinguisher to slow the spread while Commander Rossi smashed the rear window, cut the seatbelt, and removed the girl from the car while sustaining minor injuries to himself as well. The vehicle became fully engulfed just moments later, and both the mom and daughter have survived as a result of the actions of Commander Rossi and Deputy Wiggins on that day. So we've recognized him by the department with the life-saving medal, as well as the Tukula Masons Lodge recognize him as Officer of the Year for his actions. I think it's important to point out that he was doing this in his off-duty time, and just goes to show that, you know, we do this job as a love and for the career of service, and it doesn't matter whether we're in uniform or not, we're there to help others. And he was an exemplary shining example for the department that day. As part of the community engagement, we had the community police team continuing their targets of homeless camps and doing outreach, providing service to those that would accept, as well as providing resources. We had community meetings for COPCAB. We held a meeting at the request of Youth Voices for Justice. As a matter of fact, several of you were in on that meeting. We meet regularly. I meet monthly with the Tukula School District with Dr. Herdon. We actually met this morning yet again, just to discuss the progress with the schools and making sure that we maintain those communications. Also met with the Foster Point neighborhood. The CPT team had engaged with them on a virtual meeting. Items being addressed included several abandoned cars that have already been towed, suspicious activity near Baker Commodities, and municipal code violations related to a couple of the residences in the neighborhood. Tukula Tracker News was deployed. That's www.tukulapolice.com. The Tukula Tracker serves to provide those who do not use social media or in the general public with a means to track and follow news and information related to Tukula, specific to crime, public safety tips, and giving us another avenue to do community outreach and getting information to the community. In addition to the site, we are also in the process of creating a quarterly public newsletter, which will be a companion to the site. And we hope to include public education videos on our YouTube channel and an interactive Q&A section and more as time and staffing allow us to do so. We did Shop with a Cop COVID style, since we were not able to do our annual Shop with a Cop where we actually walk with the kids in the store and help them with their shopping. We had several Tukula officers and non-commissioned staff and local businesses, which include Acura, Costco, Target, Westfield Mall, and the Tukula Children's Foundation, donating money to give approximately 40 Tukula family gift cards to make their holidays special. Tukula officers dropped off gift cards to the families at Cascade View Elementary on December 9th. So for some of our highlights and significant operations, we had some of our standard chiefs meetings. We've initiated regular chiefs town hall meetings, and we've had some of the most productive meetings and just highest attendance. The last meeting we had 43 people in attendance from the department, so well over half the people. Mayor Eckberg and City Administrator David Klein are kind enough to show up and make themselves available for the meeting as well, so that they can answer questions from members of the department. I meet regularly on a monthly basis with the King County Chiefs, as well as I meet weekly with our partnered Valley Chiefs. It started off as COVID updates, but we found such benefit in sharing information between the neighboring agencies that we now do it regularly and plan to keep doing so on a weekly basis. Participated in the e-board meetings and governance meetings for VNet, SWAT, Patrol, Auto Theft Task Force, SCORE, and VIT. Our department maintains leadership roles with VIT. Commander Rossi is the current assistant commander to the team, and I'm the assigned deputy chief to the team for making sure we're in compliance with LEXA and legislation governing how independent investigations will be managed. Had a Metro Transit police chief, Jose Marinko, met with him back in December. He is new to his position, and he was reaching out to local agencies to consider what we could do for better communication between the agencies. I then introduced him to the Valley Chiefs, and he is now a part of that weekly meeting that we have among the Valley Chiefs, since he plays a vital part in his team for the entire Valley and the Metro lines. And then we also had our PD leadership meeting where Mayor Eckberg and David Klein also, and Juan Padilla also were in attendance. We discussed Lanteria, getting an update from Padilla regarding our employee evaluation, since we're heading into the end of the year, wanting to get our evaluations and keeping everybody consistent and in sync. We had a staffing update, talked about code red alerts. We talked about the sergeant assignments and employee recognition. We also talked about finding ways to create expedited disciplinary agreements, in which case we would be able to expedite by entering into an agreement with the labor organization and a officer that is under disciplinary consideration by entering into an agreement instead of following through with the lengthy internal. This is at the discretion of the chief's office, so it isn't a given that we would do such a thing. But sometimes an officer will make a mistake. There's no malice behind it, and so we want to get them quickly moving on so that we can minimize any stigma associated with it, as well as we don't want to be wasting resources on an investigation that we don't have to conduct. We also had the LEXA Summit. I was asked to speak. It is the both East Side and West Side have their own summit once a year now regarding the Law Enforcement Training and Community Safety Act. And the Criminal Justice Training Commission had asked that I sit in on both of those and provide a lessons learned presentation from the investigations that I was involved in for VIT during 2020. From that, the governor's office reached out and asked me to present to their team as well on similar issues related to VIT and the some of the issues that have come up because of the legislation and trying to find ways to iron out the kinks with some of the legislation. So we've made some progress there. However, as most of you probably already know, there's new House bills in the current session that are looking to change how independent investigations are actually handled. So there's more to come on that. I'll probably have an opportunity to brief you at a later time once we know more where the House is going with that. The Professional Standards Unit is continuing to work on the accreditation for the department. Our goal is to be accredited this year at the fall conference, which is in October for WASPIC. And right now we are on course. Commander Boyd is the one that's helping us organize that through our professional standards unit. The Valley View leadership training also took place. They held it here at the Justice Center. We're finally getting use of our big conference rooms here in the EOC, and it was a way for them to get up to date on their current situation and processes as it relates to civil disturbance and how we deploy, especially during times of COVID. We did holiday extra patrols. In November, Officer Armstrong was involved with an officer-involved shooting. That investigation is still outstanding as it relates to the prosecutor's office. VIT conducted the investigation. They have completed the investigation. The investigation's been with the prosecutor's office for about 5 weeks now. And so I've been in touch with them. They are still under review. We have now initiated our administrative review, and so we will be waiting and the pending discussions and review of the prosecutor's office before we can bring Officer Armstrong back to full-time. We did the emergency manager interviews in December, making a decision, and we have hired a new emergency manager. Her name is Mindy. She is from Renton. She was their assistant emergency manager, and she was going to be starting with us here on February 16th. Some of the first things we will do, aside from typical orientation and getting her up to speed and oriented here, we will have her do an evaluation of our current plans and emergency plans and practices and policies and see what we can do to get best practice recommendations from her moving forward and seeing what we can do to improve upon what we've already done. And then during the quarter, we had 863 public disclosure requests received. So this graph is a look at our year-end totals, gives you a look of the crime rates, our case calls for service and the case reports by month. The year-end totals for robbery and aggravated assault are very similar to the most recent previous years. Property crime saw a jump in burglary 1 and 2 with a decrease in burglary 3, primarily residential, although some resburgs are counted in the burg 1 and burg 2 statistics, continuing a trend of resburgs dropping this last year. Auto theft has been bouncing up and down the last few years, and this year it was up. We know of a few targets for Ford truck thefts, and have been working regionally on this focus with the Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force. Calls for service average per hour. We recognize that calls do not come in evenly distributed throughout the day, but for an overall view of pandemic impacts, the per hour comparison is valid. Tactical approaches would be more tailored by specific hours. These charts show the current year, the line with the triangles. I apologize. the line with the yellowish mustard colored rectangles. I'm sorry, I lost my place. So as compared to previous year, which is not shown on here. This gives perspectives as to normal range of calculated. So I think what we're trying to show here is the boxes here. I don't know if you can see my cursor coming across. So the boxes on the top are showing you what the trend has been. So the box shows you a bandwidth. And then the dots, the line as it goes from point to point is showing you the current year. So as we got towards the end of the year, things started to ramp up a little and be a little bit more along the trend, whereas during the middle of the year, you saw it actually below the trend. So year-end 10 totals put cases below 8,000 for the first time since at least the year 2000, but the average cases per day is still in the low 20s, not far off from the usual low to mid-20s, even with noticeable lows in March and June. So with that, I open up for any questions that you might have regarding the quarter.
Thank you. Council members, Deshaun, do you have any questions?
Really don't. Maybe one small question. I mean, there's a lot on here. There's a lot of moving pieces at the legislature, so I won't touch on those and the work that I'm doing with the training commission, because it all, there's a lot of moving pieces. But really kind of focus on the special emphasis. So you mentioned kind of the Ford truck and then Foster Point. And I'm just assuming that your workload is really based on things that you've been obviously gleaning through calls, through social media, and kind of other forms. And so if there's things that we kind of want to look back on, I mean, clearly there's been an issue with some issues at Foster Point, right? And then obviously we've all seen the truck issue that seems very targeted. Is that fair to say what I'm gleaning from the report?
Yes.
And then that kind of, you know, it kind of adjusts over time depending on what's going on. So as far as us, we're just looking at, okay, here's what's drawn the attention of law enforcement, and I guess in the last year or so.
Correct.
Kate, do you have any questions?
Yeah, well, comments and questions. Real excited that you guys made something special happen for Tricia. She's kind of special behind the scenes story, and it was really nice to see her get a little tribute. Excited to see Todd Rossi get some recognition. He's been Johnny on the spot on a couple of things. It's just nice to see it come back his way. Silly questions that may not all be related. A constituent pointed out a program down in Kent, and it was more about citizenship and understanding government. It's called Kent 101, and it's all kind of set up for online, and it made me think about our community
academy.
Yeah, I've actually been through it, but I couldn't remember it, the academy. Have you taken that online, or do you have any plans to bring that to the community?
We've been discussing how we can convert it to an online program. There's a lot of things that we were doing that were hands-on, you know, like actually getting out in the field and training to a certain aspect. And so we are trying to find where we would have to cut corners on those things and then add something else of value that might be able to take its place. For instance, we wouldn't be able to take them to the firing range necessarily like we have in the past, or do ride-alongs, and so we're trying to find a creative way to add other content that would have a void from those things that would be difficult to do during a time of COVID. So we are looking at it, yes.
In this place, I want to say I'm starting to see your PIO is just hitting it out of the park over and over again. The other day when they had the breakdown of how heavy is your equipment and how you can wear it, that's material I hadn't seen before, and I thought I'd seen a lot.
So yeah,
a good outlet for a lot of the same information, just to let people understand what your world is like. The vlog came out today. It was almost too hip for me. I'm getting old. But it was very, very cool, and I hope whoever's producing those can keep that going.
That's Vic, too. That's our PIO. Unfortunately, he's so good at that, I can't even think of anybody that could replace him. So I'm trying to work with him to help him reach his goals, too, because he might want to do something else in the department. And it's a double-edged sword for us because he's so good at it. I'd hate to lose him from doing that, while at the same time we want to be supportive of him to possibly go off and do something else. So, yes, I agree. He's fantastic.
We're towards cross-training, just having sit in on the editor's cut. You know, I'd like to see him stick around too, because he does really amazing things. But the awareness is going up dramatically in community about policing, which is good. The high number of PBRs, I'm not surprised, but is there a certain nature of them, or do we have a certain person just that's uber interested in this?
We have had a couple of specific individuals, but for the most part, that's pretty par for course right now, especially as it relates to wanting copies of officer body-worn camera as it relates to cases. And it's just a time-consuming process, as you know.
Okay. And then for me, I just, the worlds where I, you know, I'm hearing from people, either online or personally, Ford trucks seem to be the hot item. And, you know, I try to dump information about kill switches and different ideas. Is there anything that's working that people are doing to prevent their F-whatever trucks from being taken?
The simple answer is no. We're dealing with professionals. These are not the individuals stealing the Ford trucks are doing them to part out and resell and make money, some of which are actually going overseas to China, in which case we're dealing with professionals. They're going to find ways to disable the GPS. They're going to find ways to disable kill switches, especially where some of them, they're stolen by just being hooked up to a tow truck and taken off. So the best thing that can be done is put some type of GPS monitoring that triggers when it moves. So as soon as it does, you get an alert, and there's a chance that we might be able to get on top of it before any of that stuff is disabled. That's the best way to address that stuff.
Okay. Other than that, when I look at your chart overall, are you pleased with where we're at, or just, you know, we're sounding like, you know, earlier in the year, it looks like it dropped off a lot. And I, you know, the first thing everybody looks at, they go, oh, it correlates with COVID and how fearful we were. And now it's all coming back to where it was. So any thoughts on why?
Well, the highest number of case reports that we take have to do with shoplifting. And we had the time where people were really limited about going out and about and timid about doing so because of COVID. And now, even though the threat is still there, people are getting more comfortable with going out and about. A good example would be, you know, when COVID and the restrictions first really started hitting towards the end of March into April, driving into work during rush hour traffic for me on 405, bare roads. But now at the same time, you've got traffic, even though we've had this same lockdown in place. You know, it's people are getting more comfortable with traveling and going out. So the trend resumed a little bit of the norm. However, it's still a little bit below average, especially as you compare case reports by month. We started dropping off as it relates to case reports, while calls for service relatively remained consistent with what we would expect.
All right. The last thing is was kind of alarming. Next door, I think you guys keep an eye on Facebook. I don't know if you keep an eye on Next Door, but one of them happened to be my neighbors, and we're all sort of calling it the weird guy. He sort of comes up with or without a partner in a vehicle that they've been describing as, you know, dark metallic blue with plastic over the small triangle window in the back. He parks it in front of your driveway and then approaches the door, gets you to answer the door, whether it's through it or whatever, and starts to claim kids threw rocks at his car and the window's been bashed out. And he's done enough of this ploy stuff that it's clear he tries to ask if he can make a phone call to the police. It's been totally incidental that people have had spidey sense and said, like, have you called the police? Well, no, I haven't. And maybe I'll make the call for you. And some have said, no, you can't come in on phone. And one tactic, the person was out putting stickers on their car, and he started walking around. He stopped the car, walked around it, and started going, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Like, he just discovered damage on his car. We've seen it up in my neighborhood, which is Cascades, over at McMicken, down in Allentown. So I'll take this offline with you, but I just... there was really good descriptions with license plates, and we keep telling people to call the police, and who knows if they're doing it right. But my question is, are you aware there's somebody floating around out there?
This one, yeah, with this incident, no, this is the first I've heard of this. I personally do not monitor Nextdoor. Maybe that's something we should add to our monitoring list, but you're right. The best way for us to address it is to get immediate response, which is by calling 911 in order for us to get dispatch.
Okay.
That would also allow us to track it better by having it in our own databases.
First guy did, but it was dark. He didn't see license plates. The next person just put it up. I don't know why they put these things up and didn't call the police, had lots of license details. And we just kind of like you guys to be aware in case you spot the plates. I'll take it offline. I'll take some snapshots and send it over to you.
Please do.
Okay. Thanks. Report's great.
I don't have any questions. My fellow council members asked some really great ones, but thank you so much for the report.
Mm-hmm.
And you could stay on and talk to us about the Cop Cab community survey. Thank you again for bringing this to us.
Yeah. So does everybody have a copy of the survey in front of them, or would you like me to put it up on the screen?
We have it with our packet. So.
Okay. I think we do have some that are not privy to that. So why don't I throw it up just to. There we go. So can everybody see? So I'm going to just scroll quickly through and make some comments on it, but I just wanted to show you for everybody what is on the survey. And we've already digitized this. It's already on using Survey Hero, and it's already been transferred over to a website for us to be able to do digital. But this is the format that we utilize, and the questions. Essentially, it's a variance on whether people feel safe, very safe, whether or not they feel there's an increase or decrease as it relates to frequencies of crime. We ask them how they rate their fear. How often do you see to quote police officers in your neighborhood? We're trying to get an idea of the type of service that we're providing to the community, not just when we are engaged, but do you actually see police as a presence in your neighborhood? Want to know what type of interactions we're having. So do you know one or more of the police officers that serve your neighborhood, and provide opportunity for them to provide comments? And then discussion on specific crimes and how concerned they are about those crimes as to whether or not they're seriously concerned or whether or not they're unsure or slight concern through a variety of different types of crime. And again, providing an opportunity for them to provide information about their top concerns. Then we ask about their interactions with the Tukwila police. You know, the amount of contacts they've had within the last 2 years, manner of contact, circumstances of the contact, and then there's a bunch of check boxes they can do, as well as then asking about your experience. You know, excellent to poor, on-scene approachable, shows concern, shows compassion, yada, yada. Again, we're trying to get an idea of the type of service that the officers are providing when they engage with the public. Response time, non-emergency response, crime victim. Have you been a victim of a crime in Tukwila within the past 2 years? Overall, how satisfied were you with the service that you received? Then they asked some demographics so that we can capture where people live, their gender, community diversity, preferred way to communicate if we were to reach out to them to engage further, whether they are a resident here in Tukwila or not, and if so, how long, do you rent, do you own, trying to capture demographics regarding the people that we're serving, as well as, you know, what neighborhood do you associate with. So in a nutshell, that's the survey. However, some of the things that have come up in the discussion, again, this was brought on by Cop Cab. This is something that they've been working on for about the last 2 years. And then we were able to kick it into high gear here in the last couple months to get this going so we can get it published. But only thing pending at this point before we send it out is we need to make a decision with COPCAB about how long do we want to release the survey. So is it a 2 month, 3 month, 4 month, or is it a continuous? Do we just want to leave it going so that every time we have interaction, somebody has a means for basically providing a review of our customer service, you know, and the service that we provided. So we're still working that out with COPCAB, making sure that we have accountability with the survey data. The mayor's office utilizes Survey Hero, so we can't allow non-employees access to that, but we're looking to find a way to download the actual raw data from the survey so that the COPCAB members will have an opportunity to review the information themselves. We also have confirmation that the survey is anonymous, so the PD doesn't have access to IP addresses. When we put it out, we will provide assurances that it is anonymous so that we aren't gathering information that would identify an individual. We're also working on the translations. The Survey Hero actually will do the translations for you, but they're using a Google Translate, which is IA, in which case we want to vet the translation before we publicize it. So that's going to take a little bit of a process, but the group was considering leaning towards releasing the English version first, and then as we get them translated, we can then add on and expand the surveys that go out. And there was a concern about people filling out surveys more than once. However, the concern I had, which we haven't had a chance to approach yet, is, well, what if somebody is a victim of a crime multiple times? Don't you want to know how each incident, how well the police department responded versus the first time they respond? If they do a survey, that's the only response you get. So if it was bad service that one time, the other three or four times, if it was good service, you never see, or vice versa. The first time being good service, but then all of a sudden there's difficulties with the remaining times that we had contact. So we need to find what the balance is, and maybe there's a way we can add a checkbox that says this is a different incident that you're reporting on. The concern by COPCAB was they want to make sure people just don't, I guess, stuff the ballot box, so you say, you know, just hitting survey, both positive and negative. We don't want it to invalidate our results. And so that's where we are. We've got our COPCAB meeting here this month on the third Thursday, is it? I'd have to look my calendar. Anyways, it's coming up in about 2 weeks. And we will hopefully get those decided, or all those decisions made that we just discussed, and have that survey out here. My hope is sometime towards the end of March.
Thank you. Council members, do you have questions? Deshaun.
I'll be quick. Kind of my first thought of when I reviewed this is kind of where will the information live? Thinking about there's got to be a technology fix where you can kind of have a unique number and maybe make it available to see what folks are saying. Sounds like a lot of work was put into this, and so I'm just not going to add. I see there's a couple spaces for kind of other things, but maybe adding a last question, is there anything that wasn't covered here that you'd like me to know about, you know, my experience or your unique situation? And then obviously you touched on things that I had kind of questions for. So in thinking about the timing, you know, I, it might make sense to have launch the English and then relaunch it when you get the other languages, just to really kind of show a commitment to the information. I was going to just say, hey, there's some simple questions here, so great. That may, I'm sure you designed it that way so you could translate it. So it's good to know that's in the works. And then tell me, I don't recall seeing anything like this before, and what was the motivation in initiating it?
So apparently there was another survey that was done, I believe it was back in 2015 when it was done last. COPCAB wanted to find out about the police services and what the public's thoughts were regarding the services we were providing. And so over the last 2 years, the survey in the form that you see it here was created as a joint effort between COPCAB and Chief Linton. And Chief Linton left before they could finalize it. And so this was my very first meeting with COPCAB as the interim. They indicated that this was a priority for them, so I made it a priority for me. And we've got it to the point where it is now inputted into the survey system. We just got to narrow down the few things we discuss, which can be done in this next meeting. And then all we have to do is trip the button and have it go live. And I've taken a note regarding, a last commentary where it could be free form for them to be able to put information in, you know, regarding anything else they wanted to add. We can potentially add that as well.
I forgot one more thing, and just not to rehash all the things that have been done or anything like that, but there has been some really creative and innovative ideas coming out of the different forms that were generated. Are you incorporating some of that information from some of the spaces that were created, some of which you kind of talked about in your the quarterly report, but just thinking about some very thoughtful statements that were made from residents in kind of the discussion around, and maybe Rachel or someone else can answer this question as well, and we were kind of talking about the what are you looking for in the chief, but there were some really kind of practical experiences that could probably go and inform some of this information that's there.
Thank you, Councilmember. I would agree that there was a lot of really good information, and we'll make sure that the chief gets those specific things that came up in those meetings. So thank you for that.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I got a couple. So I'll just go on the heels of that conversation about the town halls and kind of tag it onto this. When you get your outcomes, where if you participate, how do you get to see what is learned and what's going to be done about the outcome of the data?
So we haven't gotten so far as to what we were going to do to analyze the data. Right now, we were looking about the integrity of the, well, getting the questions out and making sure we're capturing the data in a means that provided integrity. Because right now there is a narrative that creates a question of trust within law enforcement. And so we want to make sure that we're addressing that by being transparent with it. And the best way to do that, like we mentioned, is to provide the raw data from the survey, which the mayor's office can do since they have direct access to that. They can provide that directly to COPCAB. So they get the information along with the police department, and then we can work together in a partnership to see how we want to go about analyzing the information from the survey. So that obviously is the next step after what do you do with the information? And so we're looking to better ourselves as a department. And this survey, when I got a chance to look at it, the one thing that I really liked is it is trying to capture individual service that was provided versus an overlying philosophy that was captured with the listening sessions that we did for this chief's process. And so this gets us down into the weeds and gives us an opportunity to see literally how we are engaging with the public, not only how we're actually engaging, but how are we perceived? Because we may come out of it thinking, oh, that was a good engagement, but that may not be the way that the community was thinking, or vice versa. So I was really impressed with what I saw for a survey. And so now we got to roll up our sleeves and come up with exactly what you asked, which is, you know, how are we going to analyze the data? What are we going to do with it? And how do we get back to the individuals?
So the next question is, when I looked at it, I thought, wow, long. But then I realized this may be pull down menus and selects. How many questions are in here?
I did not count. So I can get back to you on that.
Okay, just if you can just throw a number my way, that'd be great. You plan to push this out because it's in a system that regular people can't get in and manipulate and look at. Do you plan to distribute this? How? And will you do it online as well and realize that online isn't for everybody?
Yes, so my apologies for my negligence in not telling you how we were going to market. So aside from being online and having it accessible on our website and publicized via social media, we also want to do word of mouth. We are going to approach the council. You are eyes and ears and have the voices of the community. So being able to reach out and go back into the community, letting the people know about that, bringing it up at council meetings for those that watch in. The other thing we're looking to do is print up business cards with the information on it that we could hand out to individuals on a contact. So as we engage with them, here you go, please let us know how we did, as well as having the forms printed out and available with the officers so that if somebody does not have means of electronic access, we could actually give them a hard copy, in which case we would then need to come up with a way for us to then retrieve them without making it difficult for them. So those were ways that we were looking at seeing what we could do to market and actually get it out there so that we can get a really diverse field of information.
And then the last question is, if you get something surfacing, even if it's in Jason's last question, what didn't you ask me about, that turns to be trend, do you plan to add it to this? Is this a one and done? What's your...
That's part of the discussion for the length of the survey. So if it is a short 3-4 month period that we look at, so we put it out there for a period of time and then we stop doing it, analyze the data, we would then look for doing it on a regular basis. I don't know what that is at this point. I think that's going to be depending upon how fruitful the data collected and how beneficial it is, and you know whether it's an annual thing or whether it's biannual, or if we go into a just leave it open every time we do this and it's just a circulating constantly refreshing itself kind of thing, we could then over time put together periods of time just like we do with our crime data for our calls for service and cases taken. If we did it around the clock, you know, and just every time we had a contact, we could then put together a pictured window of just about any segment and find a better way to analyze or find a way to actually utilize more data. The problem is that also creates more data and would create more work for trying to analyze. And so do we want to be more focused or do we want to be broader? We'll be working those things out in the next COPCAP meeting.
It's very exciting to see COPCAB involved in this and helping reconnect with the community in this way. I guess the only other thing I'd suggest is maybe intersect with your PIO that you are afraid to zero in on forever because you'd like to promote that person one day. Maybe there's a chance in some of the articles or videos you could say, you've been telling us X and this is what we did. Like, you know, just we had a whole lot of Black Lives Matter marches, a lot of things that we wanted police to stop doing, and you either already were doing it or you made some adjustments. It could be 2 or 3 items or 1 item just at the end of some of these stories saying, hey, community's been telling us they want this, and this is what we're doing about it. So because I think you guys have made a lot of changes or already were on it. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I wanted this on the agenda because I think it's an important thing for us to be aware of as council members. I was able to attend the COPCAB meeting, and there's a lot of great people on there who've worked really hard to get this survey to where it is. And I think our job is to really assist them in getting the word out and helping them make it successful. And so maybe at the next COPCAB meeting, you know, Chief Drever could take these suggestions back to them with also the question about, you know, after it's done, where do we want the results to live? Like, where would the community look for this information, and how do we make it accessible? But there's so many great people on that committee. They know what they're doing. I trust them. But I just wanted us to also be invested in making sure that it's successful for them, for all of us. So thank you, Chief Drever, for that report.
My pleasure.
The next item on our agenda is the update on combined teen and senior center projects. And I see Rachel coming. Rachel and Nate, thank you.
And there's Nate. So now we're ready. So, so council members, thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to actually turn it over to Nate, and Nate's going to walk you through kind of the update on where we are. So, but just want to say, either one of us are here to answer any questions as we get to that point. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rachel. And thank you, council members, for having us. And it's an honor to be able to present where we are right now. And it's an honor to be able to be a part of this process. So where we are right now is really in the creating a foundation and putting our team together for moving forward full throttle. So where we kind of started when I came on was with a group, our organization called SOJ. I think their council members may or may not know who that is, but we are working with Ben and Justine and Paige as the representatives from that organization, and they are walking alongside of us throughout this entire process. From there, we started having some group discussions and, just dialogue around setting kind of the foundational, maybe just say pillars from which we would build this process around. And I think without question, the main piece of that was connecting with, engaging with, outreaching to, and partnering with community throughout this process. So once that was established, we took the next step and we talked about connecting with architect and design firms and putting together an RFQ that would embody kind of the spirit from which we wanted to engage, connect with, and outreach community, and also just how we wanted to go about this process. And so we put together that RFQ, and we also, in the same time, started processing how we could connect with some potential community engagement firms, community engagement organizations, or people that have just kind of specialized, experiences in connecting with community. And so we started meeting with different groups that we were going to reach out to. We got up to 7 different groups that we've been reaching out to and just kind of touching bases with them about their philosophy, their tools, their approach around how to connect with, how to engage, how to partner with community with a project like this. And so we've gotten, in my opinion, a pretty broad range of folks that have, different skill sets, different tools, different approaches and philosophies. And we're putting together a small RFQ to reach out to those folks as well, because we might look at how we can do this internally, but we also are looking at the possibility of bringing on some folks that can help us, because we really are making a strong investment in how we connect with, engage with, and partner with community through this process. And so with that, we are literally tomorrow going to reach a discussion as a group around connecting with making a decision around who's going to be the architect and design firm that we're going to work with. We had the RFQ process close on Thursday of last week. And like I said, tomorrow we will make the decision around who's going to join our team as an architect and design firm. Go ahead, Rachel.
I just want to say, we're going to make a decision about whittling it down to who goes to
the interview.
It's part of the process.
Okay. And so after that, we are also connecting with an internal team. That internal team is myself, Rachel, Naisha, and as the community engagement manager, and then also Darren Hawkins as the youth program specialist for the Parks and Recreation Department, looking at the connection that he has to families and school-age youth that will ultimately in the future be benefiting from potentially putting together this project and making it a reality. And then also Sherry McConaughey, who is the senior programs coordinator for Parks and Recreation as well, and her connection with the senior population as well. So Rachel and I actually had our first meeting with Darren and Sherry Friday of last week to kind of introduce them to kind of the where we are in the process, but also kind of engage them with the concept and the idea of the team that we're putting together and the importance and the value of their participation and connection to the team that we want to have internally as we reach out to some very targeted audiences with this process. And so we also took the liberty of connecting with some potential, let's call them program partners for a building in regards to different folks that could offer like programs that could help out. This is just an example, but with young people. So there was an organization, Core Plus, who specializes in a lot of different work in like, you know, engineering and trades and things like that. And we were learning about different programs that they're doing across the state and across even our region. And could a project like we're working on have some potential benefits and opportunities that could be created to partner? And so I actually took the liberty of connecting with the woman that we met with again, and met with her actually last week, and we're in the process of seeing what we can do at Foster. Ironically, they actually have a grant that was awarded to Foster around construction. I didn't know that. But we're going to have a follow-up meeting and look at if there's ways, you know, to kind of make sure that things go the way they need to go. So that's just an example, but there's other groups that we've been meeting with as well. And so we also took the liberty at the request of Councilmember Idon in reaching out to a group called Youth Voices for Justice. Myself and Rachel connected with that group, had an hour-long conversation just trying to get a feel for the group, learn a little bit about them, but also trying to engage them with the idea that we felt that there was opportunities for that group to be involved in this process as well. I think the council members are aware of Youth Voices for Justice. In all honesty, there was some strong conversation around a youth center that they were proposing. But there was, by the end of the conversation, at least some agreement around them wanting to be a part of the process that we had been tasked with, which was an intergenerational center that would highlight teens and seniors. So there was a possibility of that group coming to this meeting, but I'm assuming I'll be reaching out, you know, to them to reconnect and see, you know, exploring opportunities to stay engaged with them in the process. We've also looked at Teams for Tukwila. I don't know if the council members know who that group is, as also a group of young people that we can, you know, tap into, as well as some targeted outreach with some partnerships at the schools as well. So I think, you know, kind of to summarize where we are and kind of bring it full circle, is we really are at the place where we're trying to put together this team of folks, looking at the architect and design group, looking at potentially, not for sure, but potentially adding a community engagement firm or community engagement kind of specialist that may have tools, that may have approaches that may have kind of philosophy around community engagement or all the above to help assist us. We are putting together and have put together an internal team of staff that have very specialized, specific areas of expertise in the groups of people that we're trying to reach out to, all with the idea, all with the solid understanding, including SOJ as well, that us reaching out to community, us partnering with community, us working with community, and I'll even say putting community in a space where they're even driving this with us. Everyone that we've connected to has an understanding that that is the approach. And if they're not with that, then they're not going to be working with us, period. And so I think that we are close to putting together that group of folks. And then we plan at a very comprehensive and robust outreach effort to the community. And I think also I'll just add that the most marginalized members of our community, we talked about some of the isolated seniors, some of the immigrant and refugee community, some of the folks that aren't the easiest to connect with are going to be the folks that we are trying to intentionally target to connect with, to involve them and partner with them in this process. And so I think with that, that just kind of gives you hopefully at least a general idea of where we are. We are at the beyond beginning stages of, I call it a marathon with this. It's not going to happen obviously overnight, as all of us know, but we are really trying to set a foundation, a solid foundation from which we can build on when we go out to community with folks that are alongside of us, that are surrounding us, that are connected to us, that all have the same idea and vision and value community input and partnership. So I will open it up for any questions that anybody may have. And yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for your presentation, Nate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Deshaun, do you have any questions?
I do have some quick comments. I would say thank you, Nate, for your presentation. That spotlight that you have on, you might want to turn down. You know, it's a little bit of...
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
No,
I just
gave you a hard time. Great job. I think we've been pretty clear about what we've tasked you to do and why you're uniquely situated to do it. And so really, from my perspective, it is making sure that you have all the tools that you need, and then also demonstrating a willingness to stand behind the things that we said we want you to do. So right now, it's early on. It's really not enough time to get into some of the details, but my expectation is that you're going to continue on this path. And with all the additional people that you articulated, I understand that that informs the process, but we also know the foundation for why we're here. So I just wanted to reassert that this is a community process. And then the last thing I'll say with RFQs and all the above, we also want it built. So I understand that there are timelines and associated and processes. So looking forward to, you know, the next update. I also know that at least I'm going to demonstrate a high expectation for this team to deliver.
Thank you.
Kate?
Very quickly, love what I heard. Love the intentionality of what you're trying to do. You know, with the Youth for Justice folks, they kind of had a one mindset, but a great PowerPoint pitch describing some of the things that they wanted. So I'm glad you're trying to, like, maybe, you know, accommodate the fact that they've got great ideas, but get it organized in a way that they can work together with many and get the kind of outcomes they want through some positive interaction. So good work there. I like the, you know, not most of what you talk about is not written here. So I assume you're reading off of something that might be actually some kind of a plan.
It's all from my head.
Okay, well, we need to take this recording and transcribe it, because that's some of the stuff that we're willing to subscribe to if that's the way we're interpreting it. I don't want to belabor this. We're running out of time and we got another item to go through. But this is exciting. Is there anything you think you don't have in terms of resources?
For me personally, I feel like we're right on track. I mean, there's an understanding that there is a lot of moving pieces here, but I feel like Rachel and I have put together a solid foundation with the meetings and the teams that we have around us. But that'll be something that will be, I guess, on our periphery, you know, if that does come up. And I, you know, Rachel, I don't know if you want to add to that, but that's what I would say.
I agree with Nate. Thank you.
Okay, well, just keep doing spectacular because that's what this is and that's what we want it to be. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just want to add and empower you guys because this is, I recognize this is not something that has been done. You're really trying to, you know, center community and bring them into the process, which isn't something that there's a playbook for. And I'm hoping is that what we build here and this, the path that you guys are taking is something that other cities can look to because we talk a lot about wanting community involved, but it's actually harder. It's really hard to do. And I just want to acknowledge that and let you know, I trust you. I love getting updates. This is something that I'm really excited that we're doing as a city. And to just like, keep push you guys forward. Just keep doing it. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda is the 2021 committee work plan. And if it's okay with Laurel, I do a short report, but I think I want to hold this off until the next committee meeting. That way Zach will be there too.
Of course, that's okay. It's included in your packet for reference, so I will add it to the next meeting agenda. And in the meantime, if you could look and see if you have specific questions about any of these items, we'll be able to prepare for that. Thank you.
Great. And then, Kate, if you have any thoughts because you read the packet, just, you know, shoot me an email so I can add it to. She's like, I'm good. I got other stuff to worry about, you guys.
I see where you're going, and I'd like to get all three of you put your heads together and make it what you want.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, so that item, well, let's just put it to the next meeting. Is there any objections to adjourning? All right. Well, thank you all for being here tonight, and I'll see you at the next meeting. Bye.